I'm Farai Chidea, and this is News and Notes. Cartoons and comics can be simple enough to keep a child happy and rich enough to depict a nation's culture and politics. Sex, race, government, war, all have been addressed directly or indirectly in comics. During the early part of this century, it was hard to find cartoons and comics that didn't broadly stereotype black life. Jackie Orms bucked that trend. Her cartoons were published in the black newspaper The Pittsburgh Courier in the 1930s. She was as smart, sexy, and politically conscious as some of the popular characters she drew. Nancy Goldstein authored the biography Jackie Orms, the first African-American woman cartoonist. Nancy, thanks for coming on.
Thank you, Farai.
So I'm looking at a comic strip from 1937 where the character Torchy Brown is boarding a train to New York. Why don't we start there? Describe the strip a little bit, like her style and what's going on.
Well, this is titled Torchy Brown in Dixie to Harlem. And this is the story. It goes for 1 year and tells the escapades of this young girl. She grew up on a farm, but she longed to go to Harlem and dance and sing in the Cotton Club. And so this makes for a whole year of really hilarious situations and predicaments that she gets into. But it also, as you said, at another level, tells us a lot about what was going on in real lives at the time. So, okay, here's this September 1937 Torchy strip, and she's running away from home, and she gets to the train station, and she looks on the wall there, and there's an arrow in one direction for colored, and an arrow in the other direction for white. And she says, I'll just pretend I can't read very well. So she's kind of outlining a strategy here as an undercurrent of a very funny little predicament. So she goes to sit in the white section, the more comfortable section, and the conductor finds her, and he gives her a gesture. Oh, no, go to the back. But a man sitting by her says, hey, you've got a newspaper. Have you got the Joe Louis News? And so he brings her up to sit with him, and he speaks in kind of a broken dialect. He's Italian, and as you can tell by his appearance and some of this dialect. And he tells the conductor, oh, this little lady is my very good friend. Run along, Mr. Conductor. I have lots of reading to do.
So it's setting up the whole idea of how a woman has to navigate the worlds of Jim Crow.
Exactly.
At the same time, she's this very sassy character, and you know, so many of the characters here are very you know, just sexy kind of contemporary figures, and
Yes. There's
a joie de vivre about this. And even though she touches on a lot of heavy themes, including race and patriotism, there's a certain sass to this. Is that what attracted you to her work?
Well, I was astounded at her work. I was actually looking for something else in her cartoon that is in the late 40s. Most of her cartooning was done in the late 40s and early 50s. This 1 year of 37 was kind of a little different thing. I was looking for evidence of a doll. I knew that she created a doll, and I thought I could find some evidence of that in her cartoons. And then, yeah, I found the doll, but then I went on to see all of the different topics that she took on, and that got fascinating. But you're right, the visual representations that she makes are stunning. She has beautiful people dressed very fashionably, speaking in this, you know, very outspoken, opinionated way. And I had just never seen this. And when I looked up some of the references about her, I couldn't find much on her. So I made it my job to gather up all I could find, and ended up writing a book.
You have a picture in the book of her with Duke Ellington in the mid-50s at a party. That shows, you know, and she's you know, there on his arm. And so she must have had quite a standing in the community.
Well, she did. She was known for putting on fashion shows in South Side Chicago, where she lived. She was very well dressed. And in fact, later, some of her cartoon comic strips would have paper dolls with high fashion in them. So she was very keyed into the fashion world and to fashionable people. Her husband, Earl, managed upscale hotels in the South Side because at this time, entertainers, travelers, business people of color could not get a room in the Loop. So there were several elegant hotels on the South Side, and Earl managed one of those. They lived in the hotel. And I think from there, as well as from her own stature as a cartoonist whose work was read every week, coast to coast, she did gain a lot of stature and a lot of friends. There's another picture in the book of her with Eartha Kitt. And then going through some of her archives in the DeSable Museum of African American History in Chicago, I found letters from people like Mrs. Louis Armstrong and Marva Lewis, Joe Lewis's wife. So that was the circle she traveled in, although she still was very interested in the lower socioeconomic life of Southside Chicago, and she did a lot of philanthropic work at that level too.
Now let's talk about how her work was distributed. She was exclusive for the black paper, the Pittsburgh Courier, and you might think that that would just leave her with a small local audience, but that wasn't the case, was it?
Oh, no. The Pittsburgh Courier was big, and she did have a brief stint cartooning in the Chicago Defender, which a lot of people have heard of. It's very politically very important newspaper. But the Courier was actually bigger even in Chicago. It had a big Chicago edition, had a West Coast edition, East Coast, Texas, National, and 14 different city editions coast to coast. It had a big paid circulation, but more than that, people shared their Pittsburgh Couriers. And there are stories of people walking miles to borrow someone's courier. They came out weekly. So a reader really would get their news day to day in the mainstream paper or on the radio. But this aspect of racial pride and presenting stories of achievement and success and issues was so important for readers of the time, because this is the only place you would see lengthy stories of black interest to blacks.
Nancy, we don't have very much time, so very briefly, tell us how she actually was tracked by the government. I mean, comic strips were considered political at this point, and she was investigated by the Justice Department. Just tell us very briefly.
Yes. Well, I knew she must have had some kind of surveillance because her topics were so political. She took on the arms race, the Cold War, freedom of speech. She even named President Truman and talked about the Korean War. So, I made a request at the Justice Department, and I did get her file. But what was interesting is they did not mention her cartoons. They were interested in her friends and associations and investigated her because of those. And she was with intellectuals and artists and others who, yes, I'm sure some were communists, but many were anti-communists, and she certainly was not a communist. But they followed her, and they had informants watching out for her for about 10 years.
Well, Nancy, there's so much more to this story, but we're going to have to leave it there. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Nancy Goldstein is the author of Jackie Orms, the First African-American Woman Cartoonist. She joins us from WUOM in Ann Arbor, Michigan.